Hi, this is Neil Douglas, and this is American Truth Finders. You know, we're a new show, but by golly, I tell you what, I think you're going to like it. We got some hot topics. I got a great guest tonight. His name is Ray Kirkus, and Ray is, he's exposing excessive policing. And our topic tonight, by the way, is police brutality. Can it be controlled? You know, how can we control it? And I tell you what, the thing I'm looking at is all the police brutality that's going on in this country, and this is unreal. It really is. We have an 800 number, by the way. That's 1-888-627-6008. I'll repeat that again. That's 1-888-627-6008. We want you to call in. If you have any questions for Ray or myself, most likely Ray, our guest, then I'm going to let you ask him. And don't be afraid to call, for crying out loud, because this is a call-in show. This is just, we're down to earth. And by all means, we want your cooperation. Call your friends, tell them to tune in to BBS radio station. And that, tell you what, that'll get them right on the air with us. So if you do have any questions, I want to tell you something. Ray has been has an excellent Facebook site called Exposing Excessive Policing. I'm going to repeat that because it's on Facebook and you can find it. It's called Exposing Excessive Policing. And I tell you what, it's amazing some of the stories that are horrific out there. And look, we're not saying that all police officers are bad, but I'm going to tell you, there are some bad things going on. Also, on YouTube, he has a YouTube video of the history of police militarization. We're going to ask him some questions about that. So I tell you what, I'm going to bring Ray in, and Ray is going to give us a little bit of history of his background. And I want to apologize, by the way, before I go any further, if my throat sounds a little bit hoarse, that's because it is. I've got either a sinus or some kind of a drainage, and I apologize for that. But other than that, we're going to go ahead and go on and with the show. This is every other week show. So before the show ends, I'm going to tell you about our next show, which is going to be really exciting as well. And Ray, I guess you're on the air with me now, aren't you?
Oh, yes, I am. Hi, Neil. How are you? And thanks for having me.
Ray, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Ah, now I can hear you.
I'm here.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
And I've got to figure out something here. I'm getting a feedback, but I'm sorry about that, Ray. Go ahead. What I want you to do is just tell us some history about yourself, Ray, so that the people out there kind of get, you know, to a lot of people, you are well known, but to a lot of people, you're not. So give us a little history. Will you do that for us?
Sure. Sure. Well, I'm a father. I've been a carpenter. I'm basically just a citizen that lives in the United States that at one time or another got a little help from the government, and because of their assistance to me, kind of opened my eyes to see what's really going on. The way I fight back is I run for office. I involve myself in finding information such as when certain laws are certain acts passed, such as like the National Defense Authorization Act, and certain groups don't really know what they are. So I go to Tea Party groups, I speak with them, I go to libertarian groups, I go to council meetings, I try to educate people as what's going on, because the only thing that people know is what they see on a TV. So they're really not familiar with what's happening. So I try to talk about these issues, especially lately. I've been hung up on the militarization issue. We've got a 1033 program and other different programs where the military is giving a lot of weaponry, a lot of equipment, military equipment to local police departments, usually free of charge, and with some strings attached, but however, with very little oversight as to how that equipment is used. And that's where a lot of that equipment was it in Ferguson. A lot of that equipment is right here in my town where I live. It's in the county where I live in Berrien County, Michigan. I mean, we have tanks, we have MRAPs, we have grenade launchers, we have fully automatic weapons, M16s, M14s. I mean, you name it. It's out there, and the police departments have this stuff. So, and this is what I do. I try to get involved, and I try to do what I can.
Ray, let me ask you a quick question. You say you're from Berrien County, Michigan.
Michigan, that's correct.
Now, is that a large area? When we say large, you know, compared to the rest of the country, you know, you have some. You're not like a suburb of Chicago or.
Well, technically, the town that I live in is a tourist area, but Berrien County has a population, I believe, about 180,000 people in the entire county. St. Joseph is one of the larger cities. It's a resort city. It's a city on the lake. Berrien County borders Lake Michigan, so there's a lot of tourism up here. So it's kind of like a rural suburbia that would be like outside of Chicago. Yes.
Well. So, why, when you talk about all this equipment, why would Berrien County need something like that?
Well, Berrien County, well, the sheriff will actually explain that since we have a nuclear power plant, Cook Power Plant is in Berrien County, and of course, Cook Power Plant has their own security. All power plants under the NRC, they have their own security, and they take care of their own business. But nonetheless, the federal government somehow requires that the sheriff's department, because they're tied in with the federal government, they get federal funding. The sheriff's department have an armored vehicle in case there was a need because of the nuclear power plant. So they do. They actually got a Department of Homeland Security grant, and they purchased a Bearcat, a Lenco Bearcat, for $325,000, and $275,000 came from the feds for that. So they do have a military equipment vehicle. Actually, Berrien County had that one at the time, and then they had another one. They had a Peacekeeper, which it was used in. It's actually still used by a lot of countries in their defense. And they also had an M113. It's a track vehicle that also some armies in Europe still use at this time. So it was a track vehicle, and they couldn't move it around. But of course, you know, when the giveaway was coming, they turned the Peacekeeper over to the City of Niles Police Department. I guess they need it. And now we have a 20-ton MRAP, a mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicle to protect, actually, and it was never to protect us. It's actually to keep, the quote was to keep the deputy safe. And the question that we always have is it safe from what exactly? So,
hey, we're back, and sorry about that interruption, but we have some sort of interference, and it could be the internet, it could be... it's just a technical problem. Ray, are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Matter of fact, I apologize for that, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, today's technology, is as great as it is, it can be our worst enemy. And, Ray, I'm sure you can agree with that one.
No, I agree.
Anyway, again, our number here is 888-627-6008, and we do want you to call in. If you got some questions for Ray, please call in. And Ray, when we left off, I kind of lost you. So can you pick up just about where you left off?
Well, I don't know where you lost me at. We were just discussing the military vehicles that are
right.
employed by Berrien County. And actually, for the time being, as far as I know, we still have three. We have we have the MRAP, and we have a Lenco Bearcat, and we still, I believe, have the M113 track vehicle. And when I asked the sheriff about the MRAP, it was basically quote unquote it was for the mall shooter or for the shooter on the second floor, which we haven't had any shooters, any mall shootings, or any. Shootings on any second
Well, is this happening all over the country? As far as you know.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, there's a waiting list on this military equipment, and actually Congress had some hearings on this after the Ferguson incident, and the Senate had hearings on this, and they were looking at it. It's not just a 1033 program. There's about five or six programs that either gives money or support, and originally these programs were designed to, they had to be used for two specific reasons. They had to be used for either drug enforcement, or they had to be used for counterterrorism. They couldn't be used for anything else. And eventually, that was dropped. That criteria was dropped, and it was changed into as long as it was used for police use. So whether it was for patrolling the streets or doing whatever they needed to do that would get this equipment, because the DOD doesn't know what to do with it, and actually when they give this stuff out, like in my hometown, we've got Humvees. We have military Humvees that haven't even been painted. They still look like military Humvees. They're either the beige camo sand kind of color, and we've got a couple of green ones, and all they did is put 360 lights on them, and the police drive them around, use them as a tow trucks, to pull the boat in and out of the water, the police boat, or for whatever other reason they need to use it. But they use it. It's not even a marked police car. It's just a military vehicle. So we're desensitizing the people around the country, moving these vehicles around and getting people used to this, and getting people, little kid going to pay, you're taking your little kid to City Hall to pay a water bill, and you see a Hummer parked in the parking lot, and your kid's holding your hand, you're walking, and this is something that they're always going to remember. I mean, we live in a country where we have military vehicles driving on the streets.
Ray, this is almost like a brainwashing situation as far as when it comes to children for their future life.
Absolutely. But we're not looking at it that way, but for them it's going to be the way it always was. Just like, we can say the same thing about, we've been saying the Pledge of Allegiance forever. We don't even know what we're saying, but nonetheless, this is how the way it's always been. We've been saying it since we've been in kindergarten, so we just do this. So yes, it is brainwashing, and it is conditioning. It's a form of conditioning people to accept things. A lot of the kids nowadays, I mean, they're getting pulled over by police. They don't look like the police that used to pull me over, or I used to see the suit and the tie, the tie and the shiny shoes and the uniform. Now you're basically having battle dress uniform. They wear the khakis. I mean, they look, they're bulletproof vests. They look like soldiers, and this is the whole point.
That's just like the dash cam videos. There's an article that you have that I hope people will look into on your site, Facebook site, which is Exposing Excessive Policing, where the taxpayers have this dash cam video shows a cop shooting an unarmed man with his hands up. This is no different to me as far as brainwashing people into this is what's going to happen. This is the way it's coming about. Is the future.
Yeah. In that particular incident, luckily that police officer was fired. I mean, it's not always the case. Luckily, he was fired, and luckily the man lived there in that particular video that you're talking about.
Right.
But in other
right.
cases, that isn't the case. In other situations, unfortunately, people die, and the police are back on the job. I mean, and it's because of their training. I mean, just the other day, 3 or 4 days ago, you had the New York police commissioner make a statement that he's gonna pursue the matter that resisting arrest is now going to be a felony in New York. If you resist, now you're going to be a felon because you cannot resist. So even if you're being arrested for not doing anything wrong, if you resist in any way, and now it's a questionable because the definition of resisting is what? I mean, is it pulling your hand away? Is it stepping back? Is it because you would see on a lot of these videos where on excessive policing, where a lot of times the police officer will be beating somebody and yelling, stop resisting, but the people are clearly not resisting. I mean, they've already been beaten up, and they have handcuffs on and everything. How can they be resisting? But this is a slippery slope. When you move the threshold, and this has been happening my entire life, they've been moving the threshold of what is considered a felony up and up and up. I mean, when I was a little kid, And I don't know about you, but you used to ride motorbikes or mini bikes, and you didn't have a driver's license out in the country. And you know, if a cop was chasing you, you cut through a cornfield, and if you got away, you're good. You know, and that's it. It's the end of it. You know, if you try to do that today, you might end up getting, you know, half the police department and helicopters after you, and you might actually get gunned down in that cornfield because you drove without a license.
Yeah, you're right. I was going to say. I don't remember that just, you know, anything anymore is resisting arrest. You know, and you're right. I do remember the police officers that had the tie and the hat. And I mean, we had respect for police growing up.
Yes, I did. I did, and I still do. I still do.
I do too. But the thing that's concerning me, Ray, is that this is all changing. When you call it militarization, it is almost like we have the army that is now our police force, and that's. You know, there's something wrong with this picture as far as I'm concerned.
Sure. Well, it's increasing. The police have always followed the tradition of a militaristic outfit. I mean, in all reality, in Peel's principles of police is the rank. You know, you have the rank, you have the ranking, you have the dress, you have the, you know, somewhat of a standardized dress, and you have, you know, your police officers, your sergeants, your captains. I mean, and it's understandable why it would be that way, but it's the increase of this, and the increase of this has started the militarization when the government started using more military terms. For example, even the vocabulary in the police department now is more militaristic. I mean, they're deploying officers, they're doing this, and it's this culture that is becoming more of a soldier culture. And this is also understandable because a lot of the new recruits are former veterans that have been serving in the military, and they were military. They were soldiers, and they're bringing that back, and they're incorporating that onto the streets of the cities of the United States. This also goes back to the training. The training has changed ever since September 11th. Department of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff was in charge of Department of Homeland Security, and they started training police officers. They would offer free training or very reduced cost training to local police departments, and the training was different than the normal training that the state academies or the local academies used to have. This is more in your face, more aggressive, definitely more aggressive, without a question. I mean, it's all about the protection of the police officer and very little having to do with any of the rights of the suspect. And
let me ask you a question. What really got you interested in pursuing the exposure of what's going on?
Well, I've seen it myself. What I've seen happen in courts, I've witnessed things that have happened, and I've watched police officers lie in courtrooms, blatantly lie in front of the judge, and their stories were taken as the truth. Now, when I started seeing that we have technology now, and we have cell phones, and we have cameras, and we have things like, and this stuff is becoming more and more exposed. I mean, you have the very first viral video of Rodney King, not to say that Rodney King was a good guy or a bad guy, but without that video, things would have been different. That video showed a totally out of control a bunch of officers beating a man senseless. I mean, and you have Kelly Thomas in California, another one who was beaten, a totally unarmed homeless man who was beaten to death, and of course those police officers were acquitted. So what I have a problem with is not only with the police officers that are doing the damage, but the police officers that see this going on and somehow or other do not report or turn their head the other way and don't see this happening. And when they say that all police are bad, if you see this going on, then you have a duty, as far as I'm concerned, to do something about it. And they're not doing this. So I have to be involved.
I find this so interesting, and I want to give our phone number out again, Ray. It's 1-888-627-6008. And I think we have a caller on line one. And who we got on line?
Janet from Michigan.
Hi, Janet from Michigan. How are you?
Okay.
Good. Thank you for calling
in. I understand there was some kind of a ruling that came down recently that said that police don't have to know the law. Do you know anything about that? I know it sounds ridiculous.
Oh, is that a question for me?
Yes, Ray.
Either one.
Well, I don't know if the ruling was if they don't have to know the law. I think the ruling was that if they're mistaken for the reason that they might have, for example, pulled you over, if they were mistaken for that reason, it still does not, it's not enough reason for you to get the charges dismissed because the officer did not know the law. That's kind of, I think,
oh.
I don't know how I explain that ruling, but for example,
almost the same thing.
I think the ruling was because a police officer had pulled over an individual who had a burnt out taillight, but the state law didn't require for two taillights. I think the state law only required one taillight, and because they actually, after they pulled him over, they searched the car. I guess they found some narcotics, they found some other things, and they tried to use that to dismiss the case because, you know, it wasn't appropriate because there was no law to have two taillights, and they did not prevail. The Supreme Court actually found that if the officer made a mistake and he thought he was doing his job, then it still counts. I think that's how the ruling is.
Okay, I wasn't real sure on that. But that kind of goes back to what you said earlier about resisting arrest. So if a policeman pulls you over, he thinks he's arresting you for a law that isn't on the books, and you resist, then he can still arrest you for resisting the law, I suppose.
And in New York, they're trying to push that and make that a felony. That's correct. And that would follow you for the rest of your life. Yes, absolutely.
Wow. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Janda. Thanks for your call. Again, our number is 888-627-6008. Our guest tonight is Ray Kirkus. Ray has a Facebook site that I think you, our audience, would be very interested in, and that is Exposing Excessive Policing. And I want to repeat that because keep repeating that because of the fact there. This is really highly important. I mean, it's getting out of hand. What you just said, Ray, about New York trying to make it a felony for resisting arrest.
Oh yeah,
that's
you have the commissioner going to all the boroughs and talking to the district attorneys, and they're really pushing it. They want to make a resisting arrest charge, which is a misdemeanor, of course, right now, a felony. And again, the problem is that the definition of what resisting arrest constitutes is so vague that, you know, I mean, it's pulling your hand away when they're saying, you know, but turn around or not turning around when they tell you that. That is probably enough to constitute resisting arrest. You know, told you to turn around.
Okay, let me ask you a question about another one you have that's on you. I happen to be looking at your site right now. Where New York cops illegally stop and beat a Marine sergeant for no reason. Isn't this the sergeant that was having lunch or something to that effect and watching maybe a video or something on his cell phone?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that was actually very interesting because they actually didn't even arrest him. They just beat him up and left him there, and he actually had to follow them and take their license plate numbers down and find out that they had a rental van. I don't even know what the actual conclusion of that is yet, because in that particular story, I think they were still looking to find these officers that did this and get to the bottom of it. So I don't think that's been resolved yet in any way. But yes, that's what they did. They beat him. And then you have another one. I mean, just Thursday in Round Lake, Illinois, which again isn't too far from me. And I'm going to say I'm glad that I don't really have any stories that from my county. I'm really glad. I'm not going to say I don't want any. I don't want to see any from around here. But they sure come close to me. I mean, they're in Indiana. They're everywhere around me. But so far, so good here in Berrien County, as far as I know. But in Round Lake, Indiana, you had some police officers actually kick in a woman's door and hurt a two-year-old, hospitalized a two-year-old with head injuries because the door got kicked in. And the reason that they went into this house and pulled their guns out and had all the kids out of their bed at gunpoint is because they had an anonymous complaint about a person driving a similar vehicle that was parked in the driveway who didn't have a driver's license. So,
and they kicked down the door.
They kicked down the door. She had opened one door, but then there still was another screen door, and she asked them, "Don't kick it in because I'll open it." And they kicked it in anyway. And when they kicked it in, the door hit a 2 year old and injured the 2 year old. So.
This kind of thing has got to be scary, not to just ourselves. I mean, you know, here we are, law-abiding citizens that if we go out and jaywalk, you know, and not that I would jaywalk, of course, but anyway.
Oh, that's okay. There's videos on exposing excessive policing with that as well. There are women who were jogging and they jogged, I guess you want to say, and they were tackled down by police officers and arrested for doing that.
Well, couldn't
hear the police officers because they had headphones on. So,
well, I guess my question is, in your opinion, now this is I'm going to ask your opinion. Is this becoming like when we call it a police state, this country, isn't this more like what some of these countries around the world have become or were?
Without question. I mean, it's trending. It's not slowing down. It's not taking another direction. It's going in the same direction. We're talking about this right now, and you have protests all over the country about what happened, you know, at Ferguson and what happened, Mr. Gardner in New York and things like that. And unfortunately, with me, I mean, there's still a division in that. It's a race division, and a lot of the videos that I post, there's no basis in race of what I post. There's black and white people and Chinese people and you know, Hispanic people, all kinds of people that are being harassed and brutalized by police officers. I'm not going to say there is no racism that goes on. There's unquestionably there is, but this is not a black and white issue. It shouldn't be divisive on those grounds. This is an us and them, and unfortunately, a lot of the police officers they look at it that way too. They make it divisive. They consider themselves a family, and when they actually go out to the street, they consider it a battleground. They're going out into the battleground. I mean, it's not a battleground.
Unfortunately, anywhere we go in our country anymore, whether it's a suburb or a ghetto or a downtown or whatever it might be. I guess you could say that this is a concern for everybody and anybody, no matter where they live.
Well, it should be.
It definitely should
be.
The problem I'm seeing here, Ray, is that the American people are not aware of it because of the mainstream media. Only things you hear are the race issue, which, sure, you know, like you said, it shouldn't be a race issue. This is you're trying to protect everybody. You're trying to make it known that that everybody is involved here, and no one should be treated the way that they're being treated. Now, obviously, there are people out there that do give police officers a bad, hard time. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
And they should be punished just like anybody else. But there are a way of punishing people besides killing them, shooting them in the back of the head, or beating them, or choking them, or whatever the case might be. I thought they had, you know, they've got ways of spraying somebody to kind of bring them down with the pepper spray or whatever they use.
Well, and they even have tasers. I mean, when you have a mentally disturbed individual in a parking lot, okay, maybe holding a little knife, okay, and he's a good 30 or 40 feet away from these police officers, and you know, and they're telling him to put it down, and he's not putting it down. Do they actually have to open fire on him? And then not only one shot, but when one opens fire, all of them open fire. I mean, it's just that when the first shot goes off, it becomes a firing squad, and it is exactly what happens. And there's plenty of videos in Michigan this happened on numerous occasions where this one shot, the guy, I mean, he's got a knife, one shot, he went down, deal with it. I mean, tase him, do what you got to do. But do you have to do it to this extent? And he keeps saying, well, this is their training. There's another video that I put on there. The guy had I'm sorry, I stutter when I get excited, but there was an officer who showed up, and you could see on his own body cam, he approaches somebody who's afraid of him. He has a cell phone. He drops it, and he starts running. He doesn't have anything. He just starts running, and the officer shoots him in the back, two or three shots, shoots him in the back, and then you could hear the other cop goes, well, I thought he had a gun, but there's no gun. I thought he had a gun, you know, but he gunned him down. I mean, he's running. He's not a threat to you. I mean,
well,
you can't do that. If somebody's running
you,
do you know that
somebody because you thought he had a gun, you'd go to prison.
Well, I was just going to give you a different analogy on this. If somebody was in my house and broke into my house and tied me up and raped my wife, okay, and somehow or other it was leaving my house, and if I got loose and I chased him down and I gunned him down, I would go to prison for murder, regardless of what he did to me. I would not be able to do that. But, of course, the rules don't apply to a lot of these police officers. So.
Well, this is a sad situation.
Exactly.
Again, I want to remind everybody, our number is 1-888-627-6008. We want you to call in. If you got questions for Ray, I'm sure you do, and don't be afraid to call in. Don't be afraid to get your voice on the air. No one's going to bite you or nobody's going to hurt you. This is an information show. This is American Truth Finders. By the way, I want to give you our email, which is Neil, N-E-I-L, D1 at AmericanTruthFinders at gmail.com. That's Neil D1, AmericanTruthFinders at gmail.com. Also, you can find us. Our website is it's still under construction. I apologize, but you can go to it, and it is under American Truth Finders. So we invite you to do that as well. Again, our number here is 888-627-6008. We invite you to call in and ask Ray or myself, preferably Ray, because Ray's the one that is the expert on this. And that's why I have him on the show tonight, because I think this is such an important issue that is being unnoticed. Only unless it is, and I don't want to make this sound bad, but only unless it's racial, and that's where the uprising comes. Is if it's racial, then it gets noticed. And as Ray has mentioned earlier, this is all about anybody, white, black, Hispanic. It doesn't matter what color. That the police are getting out of hand. Ray, I want to ask you, when you think of your small community, I say small, because from what it sounds like, you don't come from a large town, and you see this type of equipment with your police department, what can you imagine would see if you were to go into Chicago or Detroit or New York or, you know, any other large city, what would you imagine you would find and how would it affect you?
Well, I try to stay away from Chicago, but I have seen footage of how it looks in New York. And to my understanding, I mean, New York, the city of New York is becoming a total police state. I mean, to my understanding and what I've seen is that there are police officers walking around with fully automatic weapons in New York City. You know, and this concerns me. I mean, this is what happened in Nazi Germany. This is what happened in the former Soviet Union. This is the trend that you start doing. And they're also talking about taking more defensive mechanisms away from the citizens. I mean, they're talking about outlawing bulletproof vests and Kevlar and body armor. I mean, to all civilians, even if you would have a job as a security guard, say, or, you know, and that's kind of interesting. If you were a security guard and you carried a gun, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to have a bulletproof vest on, because you'd probably be one of the first targets if somebody was going to do something. So they're not, I haven't seen any exceptions for this. So yes, it bothers me. We don't have, like I said, we don't really have it here yet, but in the bigger cities, and even in Michigan City in Indiana, which isn't really that too far away from here, they have an MRAP. I mean, some places are getting two or three. Some places have military helicopters. And I'm not saying that a lot of this military equipment isn't useful. I mean, the governments have been getting surplus military gear for a long time, and jeeps and generators and all kinds of other stuff that could be reused. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when you have equipment that is made for specific purposes, such as, like I said, a mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicle, which is a 20-ton monstrosity, and its main purpose is just to keep the people inside safe from roadside bombs, IEDs, I don't really see much purpose for that on our streets. In addition to that, you're actually putting the police officers in danger, because, I mean, they're very unstable. They're very heavy. A lot of roads can't support them. A lot of bridges can't support them. There's culverts out there that can't go over there. So even if you needed them in a split second, or, you know, in a minute, if say there was a school shooting somewhere and you needed to deploy the MRAP, well, you have to have a logistic route to get to that school, and you have to make sure how you can get to everywhere without having to go over roads that wouldn't be able to handle that particular that type of equipment. Now, if that, and they have their hatches, their doors are operated by hydraulics, pneumatics. If this thing would flip over into a creek or fall over into a culvert, it would literally entomb, encapsulate the people inside there. And there's been soldiers in the field that have drowned, that have been killed because they hit a big bump. Their heads, their helmets hit the ceiling, and they break their neck. I mean, these things aren't, you know, it's not something that these police departments or sheriff's offices could just take and utilize like a cruiser. Here, we got another car. The military actually had training how to deal with these and how to survive a rollover and everything else. We don't have that. There's actually an MRAP-U. It no longer exists, but the military had an MRAP-U, MRAP University, to learn how to deal with this equipment. And we're giving it with no training, with no nothing, to local police departments to utilize. So there's a liability issue that arises with that, too. And that liability is on the taxpayers.
And before we go to our next caller, which we're going to do here very shortly, I just want to make this quick comment. I'm sure that some of the excuse is that, well, we, you know, with the situation with all the terrorists around the world, with ISIS, that this is also to help protect us against that type of terrorism in this country. I'm sure that, you know, there's all kinds of excuses for having all this equipment. But it just seems to me that this has been going on long before this took place. And let's go to line two and let's talk to Cheryl. Cheryl, hi, how are you?
Hi, Neil and Ray. I have a comment about this generally. And Neil, you just led into it. It's the paranoia factor in the local politicians. For instance, your county commissioners who deal with directly with the funding of the sheriff department equipment, which includes this military equipment, as well as their ordinary equipment. And what we're looking at, what we have begun doing here, and I am with the Berrien County area, okay, is holding the commissioners to look into this, how they're allocating the funding. And, you know, I think what people need to do is, instead of just, of course, educating people is essential, but just instead of just complaining to public officials, is to pin them down to action questions. for instance, you know, what law prohibits you from controlling the allocation of funding to the sheriff department to maintain, you know, community policing services and away from this mercenary training. And that's the kind of introspective approach that the citizen can integrate with their county commissioners, particularly because if it's a sheriff department equipment you're looking at, because they are, you know, the sheriff has one duty and the sheriff department has another, and the taxpayer pays for the all the equipment and training and insurance for all this other militarized approach to policing. So this is where... Go ahead.
Yeah. No, Cheryl, I was going to say, I want you to stay on the line because I want to bring up a subject that when you talk about funding to both you and Ray, because I find this to be a situation of how often is federal funds denied or threatened, let's put it this way, to be denied if you don't do as the federal government tells you to do. And I'm sure that a lot of this equipment is part of that funding. That you're going to lose this, and this if you don't go along with what the federal government says you're going to use this money for. Now, Cheryl, I don't know if you know, have heard anything about this. And Ray, I'm asking you the same question, but I'll let Cheryl go first, and then I'll go back to our guest, Ray.
Okay. Yes, we do. And Ray and I have both looked into this, along with many other people. There's many of us actually working this. The funding, really, your concern isn't really pertinent to what the use of the equipment. The federal government's pushing it on people. No, they're not limiting funding because you won't take it. The funding only pays for the transport, initial transport of it to the community, and then from then on, the taxpayers have to pay for everything, you know, insurance, washing it, fueling it, training with it. So definitely the funding of the use of it is, and the mental, you know, the mentality of using it. This is what the citizen can control, because that is a local policy. And your county commissioners, first you have to get them over the paranoia and not wanting to do anything, which is typical. But when you get beyond that and you start asking the right questions, and the right question is, what law prohibits you from controlling this? You know, if you just go, I don't like it, well, they're not going to do anything. You've got to hold them to due process. You know, what we know, you've given us notice of this. Now here's our meaningful opportunity to respond. And now here's what our question is. Now give us our answer. See, that kind of approach now pins it down.
Okay. Cheryl, thanks for your call, and I'm going to have Ray respond also. We appreciate you calling in. Appreciate you listening in, Cheryl. I think she's given some pretty good answers, Ray. What do you think?
Oh, I totally agree. Cheryl made a very good point. The equipment is, first of all, it's free. Of course, nothing is free, but it's free because the DOD doesn't want it. And a lot of it doesn't have to be returned if it is actually used. There are conditions. I mean, if you read through the 1033 program especially, there are conditions. The equipment has to be used within the first year. If it's not used within the first year, it has to be returned. And then the demilled equipment, which is like the Humvees, the automatic weapons, the MRAPs, and the higher, you know, the higher, more expensive use stuff, it cannot be sold to the public, cannot be auctioned off. The Hummers, if you don't want them, they have to go back to the military. And the military, they don't want them back. They definitely don't want them back. They want you to keep them. They'll use any excuse they can to let you have them. And in some cases, some of these Humvees have actually disappeared. There are missing Humvees that have been acquired through these programs, and now they're unaccountable. And there are M16s that have gone missing, not in my area, but across the country. There's weaponry that's missing. So it is free, but the title with the bigger stuff and the demilled stuff, it stays with the Department of Defense, which means they're tracking it, which means all this equipment, all these, I mean, just another look at this, all these MRAPs, all these Hummers, all this equipment, the Department of Defense knows exactly where it's at. It's positioned all over the United States at all the police departments, sheriff's departments, everywhere else. So they know where this is. And again, if they need it, and it's still theirs, technically it's still theirs. They're just on a lease. The title stays with the DOD. So that's free. As far as federal funding is concerned, Marion County survives approximately over 50% is federal funding. Our county it totally depends on federal funding. And federal funding, of course, isn't written into the budget. The only thing that has to be incorporated in the budget are monies collected in taxes and monies collected in fines and fees, and that's it. And federal funding is basically in the comprehensive annual financial report. It's generally not in the budget. So a lot of that money is additional money that comes into the county. It's almost like a black budget that the county has that they can use. And that federal money is used for things like emergency management. For example, you have the Presidential Policy Directive, which provides for an emergency manager, and actually takes the entire county and turns it over to the federal government. And then we have a sheriff that makes public statements, and I'll quote him. He says, "I'm going to do whatever the federal government tells me to do." Well, it's kind of funny that he made that statement numerous times. He's not appointed by the federal government, and he isn't positioned in his position by the federal government. He's elected by the people of Berrien County to his position, not by the federal government. But when you have these local departments and you have the sheriff's department, you have everybody in the federal pocket, well, then they are going to do everything the federal government tells them to do, because they're going to withhold funding if you don't do it.
Well, you know, this is a real touchy situation that it's a shame that not more people are aware of this. And of course, mainstream media is not going to make us aware of it. When you talked about a lot of this equipment disappearing, then I guess makes you wonder, is it going into the hands of people that that we should be concerned about? Of course, we don't know that answer. Don't know if we'll ever have that answer. But the bottom line here, Ray, is that you are making this aware as much as possible for the American people. And this ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you something. Facebook is open to anybody. And Ray's site, exposing excessive policing on Facebook, you need to go there. You need to see what it is. I was going to ask you about your YouTube video, Ray. You have more than one up there. I didn't get a chance I saw one, and I just wondered if you had any more on the history of police militarization.
Yes, I'm planning on putting a few more up. I'm also planning on doing a few on Agenda 21 and how it is actually affecting local communities as well. I did want to touch on one thing here, and I don't think we touched on it. It's pretty important, I think, for your listeners to understand that it's not just about what's going on with the police brutality and the militarization. It's also the consequence and the costs that maybe a lot of people don't understand that are associated with this activity. And it's not just the lives that are lost. It's not just, and it's tragic that lives are lost. It's tragic that people are hospitalized, brutalized, et cetera. But there's a monetary association to this. And that's for the wrongful death suits and the brutality suits that go into civil courts. Even though the police officers might get acquitted, a lot of times the civil cases move forward. And the civil cases get humongous awards. I mean, they're huge. I mean, just like if you were in an industrial accident, if you would lose a finger or if you would lose a thumb, there's a dollar amount attached to body parts. There's a dollar amount attached to lives. And on the average, you might. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but that's the way it is. I mean, and lives are generally worth anywhere between $3 and $10 million. So okay, when you have a wrongful death, that officers might be involved in, and they hurt somebody, or they somebody loses a family member, a lot of these monetary awards come out of the taxpayers' pockets. I mean,
okay, Ray, I hate to cut you short, but we're about 30 seconds from being off the air. I want to thank you so much for being our guest tonight. ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure that you appreciated everything he has to say. But go to his Facebook site, Exposing Excessive Policing, and you'll get a lot more information. Thanks again, Ray. I want to tell everybody about next week or in two weeks, Dane Wigington is going to be on, and this is going to be about chemtrails. And I know you're going to enjoy this show because, again, it's very important. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Neil Douglas, and this is American Truth Finders. And you can look us up on Facebook as well. And if you have anything to comment on, please do. In the meantime, we'll see you on the 22nd of February, which is 2 weeks from tonight at same time, 8 o'clock. And I want to thank our host, Ray Kirk, for being with us. I think that, and I thank our callers for calling in. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, God bless, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.